This is the Business Storytelling Show, a top global marketing podcast listened to in more than 100 countries, live streamed on social media, and broadcast on DBTV. Christoph Trapp chats with industry leaders to help your company tell better business stories. Here's today's episode.
Hey, 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 business storytellers. How's everyone doing? Episode 658 of the Business Storytelling Show. Today, we're going to talk about how do we create content for dull topics. What the heck is a dull topic? Because, you know, I was thinking about that, and people talk about that all the time. Can I create good content for this topic, for that topic? Oh, we can't do that. We can't do that. We're in the financial industry. We don't have any stories. Of course you do. Our processes are way too long. So, I mean, you hear all these excuses all the time, but how do you do it? And so anyway, I was thinking about that a little bit. I'm like, I consume content around dull topics all the time. Maybe I'm just a nerd. I don't know. But Ellen Lichtenstein, she is joining me on the show today. You can check out her website, justaddcoms.com at the bottom there. Recently relaunched, looks great. And we want to find out, what can we do? How do we create good content, even when the topic might not be the sexiest one or whatever the right term is? Ellen, welcome to the show.
All right. We got it.
We're on the wrong side. Typically, everybody, we fist bump like that. And Ellen and I were thinking, well, why don't we try it this way? And we had a plan. And then somehow our pictures showed up on the opposite side. So the plan went out the door. It happens. Hey, thanks for trying things. I always enjoy that. Great idea regardless. So tell me a little bit about why is this topic even of interest to you? And what is a dull industry?
Sure. Yeah. So I think context really matters. And the reason I can sort of talk about dull industries is because I started my career the first 8 years in kind of like the least dull industry imaginable, and that was reality TV. I was a producer, a casting director, a lot of different things like that on the East Coast. For many years, I worked on a lot of tattoo shows, kind of credit the tattoo shows with me looking like, you know, how I do my tattoos all over the place. So I worked in this industry where it was really, really exciting, and everyone wanted to know everything and tell me all about it. And then I decided to relocate to the Midwest and settle down with my husband and switch careers and sort of get into corporate communications. And it was just purely by accident that I stumbled into working, doing communications at an insurance industry. And it took me a really long time to find an insurance agency. It took me a really long time to find a job because people sort of thought, well, you're a TV producer, what can you do? And I had to convince people that I actually could do a lot of things that you need in any type of communication, especially storytelling and creating compelling content. But ever since then, since 2014, so for 10 years now, I've been working in the insurance industry. And when I started my own business, I did a lot of insurance content marketing. And then I even moved into things like legal, SaaS software, financial services, accountants, business coaches, a lot of things where people want content. They want content to drive their marketing, but it's not a natural fit. It's not reality TV. It's not the Kardashians, and it's not, you know, something that you naturally know how to tell a great story for. So I've found that I can take a lot of what I learned early in my career and really the foundations of good storytelling, entertainment, humor, things like that, and I can apply them to any industry, particularly helpful in the ones that don't have that kind of natural hook.
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me too is like, I mean, even the comparison between the Kardashians and insurance content, I mean, it's like that's not even comparable. But I actually, like when you said that, I was like, you know, when I've done content, let's say in healthcare, and they expect numbers like the Kardashians, or they expect numbers like some TikTok influencer, how many people are going to watch this video? How many, are we going to get to 1 million? And I'm like, your target market isn't even 1 million people, you know, like for sure. So it's kind of interesting. So how do you kind of bridge that gap to even get started when you talk to those industries? How do you explain, here's the reality? Yes, we can learn from any kind of content, quite frankly, but, you know, creating content for an insurance carrier or whatever, or pet insurance, that's not health insurance for people. Obviously, it's very different than creating content that's truly, purely educational.
Right. So you do have to set expectations. And I definitely have experienced with clients, sometimes insurance agencies, they're very small. They might think, let's create some really great content and go viral, like you were saying. They think it's going to get a million views on TikTok. So you do have to set expectations and say, you know, we could create the best content in the world for your audience. And you're trying to say, convince them to buy your insurance product or come to your financial services business or whatever it is. But as you said, the target audience is not nearly as big. It's not, the entire world is not your target audience. So trying to set expectations from the get-go and really talk about those end results quantifiably. You know, for a lot of insurance agencies, if they could increase their book of business 10% or 20% or whatever their number is year over year, it doesn't take that many new clients, or it doesn't take that many upsells and cross sells with their current clients to get there. So it's really, you don't need a million views. No insurance company really needs their stuff to go viral. They just need to have stuff that speaks to the people that they really need to be speaking to. So I think that's the key.
That is the key, but you have to figure out who are those people, who are you trying to reach, why are you trying to reach them, and then what story is it that you're trying to tell, and what's something you can share that's unique. So how do you make those stories interesting? I mean, is it really just about finding a person that's impacted by the service and telling their story, or how do you, I mean, let's pick one, financial services, insurance. I know you posted a couple other examples on your website on LinkedIn when you shared this, insurance, financial services, and legal.
Yeah.
I mean, legal does really affects people. Why does that fit here? And how do you make it interesting?
Well, so when I think of legal, so I do a lot of work for software companies. So I moved from working for an insurance agency doing communications to their members and the insured to moving more into insurance technology, which then took me into financial services technology, fintech, and legal tech. So one of my clients is a contract management software. And all that really means is when you're a lawyer at a corporation, like say you're at a huge hospital system, you have hundreds of thousands of contracts that you have to figure out how to keep sorted and know what's in them and how to renew them and all this stuff. So our audience is lawyers. I mean, our audience are people who are lawyers and they're very deep in their world of law, and they need to be convinced to buy a software that's going to help them in their day-to-day role. But it's really not, you know, exciting unless you, again, like you said, maybe we're just nerds. I really love the stuff I do, but it's not the most exciting topic. And there's so many different ways. I have a list of kind of my top 10 ways to create compelling content in kind of a drier industry. But something that happened at this company that I think is a great example is someone decided that they could rewrite a Taylor Swift song as a parody all about contracts. And it's going to sound bizarre, but we did a music video. He played the guitar. I mean, it was brilliant and it got a great reception in the legal community. People thought this is so funny and I can really relate because the song was all about the chaos of contracts, having paperwork everywhere, not being able to sort through it. And, you know, can we say someone picked up the phone and called and bought the software because of that music video? It's hard, you know, to make a direct tie a lot of times between the content and someone making a sale, but it can help shape the brand perception. It can help people say, wow, they're doing something fun over there. Maybe I should check out what they're doing. Maybe they're interesting. You know, they're not just the same old software that we've been using for 20 years. So it's a good way to open a conversation.
You know, do you think when companies in those industries, I mean, is it a way to just set themselves apart? I mean, I'm thinking about like even live streaming and podcasting. And I know like everybody will say, oh, everybody's now doing it. I'm like, the reality is not everybody is doing it, but more and more people are doing it. But it's certainly in many industries to do a branded podcast is still a differentiator, right? Because there's not that many people who are doing it. And to do a live stream, which is what we're doing, and I would recommend that. I don't get why people don't live stream their podcast recording. I do not get it. Like, you know, you reach all these people you've already built and whatever. So telling better stories, it is a differentiator or not?
Absolutely. I think so. I just think that you have to be thoughtful about how, why are you doing a podcast? Are you doing it just to say we have a podcast? Because I've been part of podcasts that really had no other purpose than someone thought it was a brilliant idea that if we do one, we're just going to engage our customers so much more. And it didn't have a lot of thought put into who are the guests going to be and what are the topics and how frequently are we going to do it and can we do it consistently and high quality? So all these things you need to really think about. And are you adding something like, are we doing a podcast just because it seems like a good way to drum up some attention, or we're really adding value to the world? And I'm a big believer in not doing things just to do them, but, you know, make sure if you are doing something that it's adding some value to somebody's life. And yeah, so if you're good at what you're doing, then absolutely creating a podcast could be a way that a brand, if the industry especially is not saturated with, if not everyone in that brand or that industry already has a podcast, then it can be a big differentiator.
Are there content types that are better for some of these industries than others? I know. So I 100% agree on the whole podcast thing. And in fact, I think that applies to just about any content type, quite honestly, right? I mean, if you don't know why you're doing it, why are you creating a short form video content type? Or why are you creating LinkedIn posts? Why? Is anybody looking at them? You know? Or is it just for people who come to your page? I mean, you always want to be clear about what the goal is, but are there content types that are better? Are blog posts better? Or I hope not. White papers better. You know, I mean, blog posts I'm a fan of for the most part when people do them well, but white papers, are they better? I don't know. What's like the best, how do you know what the best content type is for your company?
I think you have to experiment, because the best content type is the one that achieves your goals, right? It's if your goal is to convert leads into customers, then the content that does that or helps you along the way. If your content is just to raise brand awareness, then the best content is something along those lines. So, you know, to bring back my previous example, the company that did the music video about legal software, they were really into just let's get people to know who we are. We're going to make a splash at these industry events where nobody else is doing something that's fun and creative and funny, and we're going to stand out. And maybe it doesn't lead to sales, but it's all about brand awareness and starting to recognize this is a company with sort of a personality that we might be attracted to. If you're a customer, you might say that. Whereas if you are deep down the sales funnel and somebody is deep into considering, you know, I've got competitors A, B, and C, and I need to make my choice between them, an ebook or a white paper, something that is a little more in-depth, something that provides research, something that compares very hard, like facts, like here's what we do versus the competitors, that would probably be more useful at someone who's very much at that buying decision point. So short answer is the best kind of content is the one that achieves the goal that you actually want to achieve at that point. But also kind of along with that, mixing it up. I mean, because people learn in different ways, people prefer consuming content in different ways. For a long time now, we've sort of been under the impression that the more video, the better. And I saw a friend who is a PhD research scientist and a friend of mine post on Facebook the other day, and she said, I am so tired of everything being video, because if you would just put it in writing, I could read it and consume it, you know, five times faster than that person is talking. And I hate all the intros and I hate the fluff. I just want to see the facts. And so we have to consider that for everyone who prefers video, there's another person who would prefer to see it in writing. So I'm a big fan of mixing stuff up and say, like, if I have a blog on a topic, I create a short explainer video on the same topic and I embed it at the top of the blog so that there's always a little bit of a choice for how people want to consume things.
You know, what's interesting about that too is, I mean, I kind of go back and forth, right? I mean, when people want me to just listen to their podcast, sometimes I have time to do it and sometimes I don't. And the other thing I noticed too is, especially when it comes to audio content, I mean, if their audio is just horrible, at some point I can't listen. I don't care how good the content is that they're saying, right? But if I can't listen to it, here's my ears, it hurts my ears, it hurts my brain, I'm just like, I can't get there. So, but the one keyword I think you said was personality. And I've heard a lot of people kind of talk about that before, you know, they can't have a certain type of personality, but just like humans, I mean, not every personality has to be silly. Not every personality has to be in your face. Not every personality has to be funny or whatever. I mean, I just listened to, you know, Elliot Curry on the Marketing Demystified podcast, and he talked about how you have to inject humor in your B2B marketing? Because B2B marketers are humans too, believe it or not. So how do you determine what is your personality, and then how do you kind of move it forward?
Determining your personality. I think it can, the people you have at your company doing this work for you can play a big role, because I know certainly my own personality and my flavor, my sense of humor and my preferences, they have played a big role in the content that I've developed for different brands. But that's not to say that, you know, if I work for 20 companies, each one of those companies isn't going to have the same personality, because they are, you know, they're different audiences, different industries, they're trying to achieve different goals. But I do think the human element is really important, and you can have a brand can have a certain personality or a voice or whatever, but it can still know when you need to be serious and you're addressing something really serious that shouldn't be made humorous, versus, you know, maybe there are other times when you're addressing something that you can present in a positive or a humorous light. So it doesn't mean that you can't have personality, but maybe some brands' personality is that they're a trusted source of knowledge and they don't joke about these things, but they deliver things in a way that makes you trust them. And I still think that doesn't mean it has to be dry. It doesn't have to be boring. It's hard to give examples. It's hard to give concrete examples without talking about kind of very specific cases. But I guess in general, I would say, yeah, you know, you don't have to use humor every time, or even you don't have to be a stand-up comedian, but you can still infuse things with a little bit of wit. You know, you can still add, again, personality to it.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting. And, you know, I know you work at the intersection, I want to get this right here, of communication, connection, relationships, and horses. Now, I assume we're not going to find a tie-in for horses, but maybe talk about that for a second. And then let's talk about the importance of how does content build relationships and how we can do that for any brand.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy you asked me about the horses, because I could talk about them all day, even more than content. But I've been a horse person my whole life. People always ask, how'd you get into that? And it's really just, it's been a lifelong thing. And after getting my master's in communication and working in communications across different industries for so long, I sort of started thinking, is there a way that you can combine these two things? Because I've learned so much specifically about communication and relationships and storytelling, the stories we tell ourselves and the stories that we put out there to other people. I've learned a lot of that from the horses. And I found that, in fact, there is a field. It's called, in some ways, they'll call it equine facilitated learning, equine assisted learning, equine facilitated services, different things. And it's where we work with the horses. It can be sort of in a coaching capacity. It can be in a team building capacity. It's not therapy. That's the biggest thing that it's not, because there is a whole other field that's, you know, people who are psychologists working on that. But it's a way to work with the horses, really illustrate things about ourselves and can show us how maybe we're coming short in the way that we show up to relationships and things like that. So working with the horses, and because now I've been trained to facilitate those, it's not sort of just willy-nilly. It's like I have a method of how I'm trained to work with people and the horses and point out things like things I'm noticing, things that they should dig deeper into, things like that.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I have very little experience with horses. I fell off a horse once, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't a horse. It was like a pony. It's been a while. So I was a pretty tall kid at that time too, but wasn't much fun. Now, you know, when I first reached out to you to come on the show, I actually asked you about AI and content. So we took this interesting detour, which is great. But I do want to talk about AI just for a second. How can AI actually help us with some of these companies, with some of this content? And I, you know, I'm a big, big believer that people cannot go to AI and just say, write me an article on this topic, do this without anything. But I think AI could help me, and I could write an article for insurance, whatever, or, you know, get it started. And then I can say, make this a little bit more human or whatever it might be. I mean, that could be a one way to do it. But what are your ideas?
Yeah, I find the funny thing about your sort of hypothetical there is that I've only ever found AI makes things worse. If I say, here's a blog I wrote, I want it to be funnier. The thing that and I've done this more as an experiment, just to see kind of what will come out of the AI. And I haven't been overly impressed, and I've tried different platforms. You know, I won't name the names, but I've tried different ones, both free, paid, premium versions, open source versions. And usually it just comes back even more generic and even more, you know, just not good. And so that's not where I see it being very useful. Where I have found a lot of use is if you're trying to brainstorm and you don't even know, you know, sometimes I like to brainstorm, give me the worst idea possible. And sometimes something really genius comes out of people just throwing out the worst possible ideas for a topic that they can imagine. And so that's something you can use AI for. You can just tell it, give me a list of 100 headlines or, you know, just mass bulk idea generation. And there might be something in there that turns out to spark a human to come up with something that's better. Rarely ever has the AI produced something where I'm like, oh, that was really good. Let me take that and run with it. The other way that I find it really, really helpful is kind of increasing the efficiency of myself and other content creators as writers. If I've written something that I've put a lot of time and research into, and it's taken me a really long time to write, and then someone says, can you, you know, condense this 2000 word piece into something that's 500 words that I could just slap up on a quick whatever, like, you know, that's a little long for a social post, but something like that. I find that AI does a really good job if you give it amazing input that was written by a really good writer and say, pull out the key points or summarize this or turn this into a LinkedIn post or whatever. It gets you a lot closer, like say 80% of the way there, and takes zero time. Whereas, you know, for me, it might take a few minutes. It probably wouldn't take more than 30 minutes to do that type of work, but I can get, you know, with the help of AI, I could do that in maybe 5 to 10 minutes instead of 30. So I find it to be something that can just expedite us a little bit.
I cannot think of an example where I've taken something AI created and I ran with it exactly, but it's just such a fantastic tool to brainstorm. I mean, you can just be like, hey, this is my email to this audience and give me 50 subject line ideas. Right. And here's the tone. And I don't think I've ever found one that worked exactly, but I've used pieces of it, or one gave me an idea and I'm like, oh, that's a really, really good idea. Well, you always run out of time. Time flies when you're having fun. So really appreciate you coming on the show. Episode 658, almost in the books here. But before we leave you, Alan, tell us who should reach out to you. Who do you work with? Got about a minute left on the show. Really appreciate you coming on.
Sure. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I kind of work with a little bit of everything. Anyone who wants to can reach out to me. I'm always happy to give advice or point people in the right direction if there's something they're struggling to do. I'm not someone who can do every, you know, I have a lot of expertise, but I also am good at saying, okay, that's not my area, but I know someone. I have a huge network of great creative professionals who I can point people towards. So yeah, really anyone who wants to say hi, happy to hear from you.
Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review The Business Storytelling Show on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. See you then.